You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio once again. We appreciate you taking time to hang out with us, Brendan and I. And Brendan's joining us now from Edmonton, Alberta. Brendan, how are you doing?
Kelsey, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm doing okay.
You don't sound too well.
Yeah, I've been kind of fighting a little bit of the flu. I thought I had a beat, and it's kind of creeping back up on me. A lot. It's going around in Vancouver, man. It's crazy.
How can you catch the flu in Vancouver?
I don't know.
There's no adversity there.
There's no what?
There's no adversity there. No cold weather. No blowy winds.
There's cold weather. What are you talking
about? A little
about?
Bit of rain.
There's cold weather here, man.
Unbelievable.
You've
gone soft since you've left the prairies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. Like, I wore shorts to work yesterday, so that's pretty sweet. But, Brendan, we got a good show today, man. I'm pretty excited. We've got two guys fought on last weekend's UFC card. Spencer Fisher will be joining the program right away, and we're also going to have Kurt Pellegrino on the show, so a couple lightweights who both won at UFC 64, and it should be interesting to hear those guys' comments on the card. And then after that, I guess we should talk about UFC 64, some pretty dramatic results.
Yeah, it was not a bad show. I think I was pleasantly surprised. I was kind of disappointed that Jardine didn't get to fight, but I was pleasantly surprised by the show. Although my pay-per-view conked out a couple times.
Yeah, same here, actually. You know, I got to say that when we'll talk about it afterwards, I was kind of disappointed. I thought that a couple of fights were a little bit slow on the slower side, and there was some memorable moments. But, yeah, with the pay-per-view thing, yeah, you're absolutely right. Same thing happened here. More so early on in the pay-per-view, but it blacked out a few times. It annoyed me.
So how much of that has to happen before the UFC gives us our money back? My question.
Well, is that a UFC problem, or is that a, you know, your cable distributor's problem? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone else had problems, you can always email us at radio@fcfighter.com.
If only one of us were an MMA journalist, they could find out.
I'll take that as a cut. And I should add, too, before we move on and bring on Spencer Fisher, that the show is available on iTunes. I've noticed that some people still ask me that, and whether it's via email or on forums, the show is available by iTunes now. So for those people who want to download and subscribe to Full Contact Fighter Radio, it is available on iTunes. And that's it, man. You're not going to help me out? You're not going to say anything about iTunes?
I don't use it. I don't know anything about iTunes. Right. I'm one of these dudes that's like iPodless.
Yes.
I look around at people on the street, and I'm the only person that doesn't have, like, white wires coming out of their ears for some reason.
Well, that's the funny thing here in Vancouver is that, I mean, let's face it, Vancouver, there's a lot of people who maybe aren't necessarily mentally stable. And, you know, you see people, whether it's cell phones or iPods talking, and on the bus, if you're taking the bus, you always got to do a double take these days because you don't know if they're, like, singing along to an iPod because you can't really see the headphones that easily. If they're talking to a cell phone, it can be scary.
Well, there's a big financial boom here in Alberta that people are talking about. So, you know, a lot of the hobos actually have cell phones and iPods.
Yeah, well, times are... I think that is the true indication of a booming economy.
We still have hobos, though.
Really?
Yeah, sadly.
Not really sure what hobo even means anymore, but...
You know, the guys with the floppy hats and, like, the... Yeah, the... growth and... Big long overcoats.
All their possessions in a handkerchief tied
exactly.
to
a long willow branch and a handkerchief tied at the end.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen them.
Yeah, sure. Well, on that note, we'll bring on Spencer Fisher because this is really going nowhere fast. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
The International Fight League returns to Portland's Memorial Coliseum Thursday, November 2nd for the World Team Championship semifinals. Hometown hero Matt Lindland leads his team, the Wolfpack, into battle against Boss Rutan's Anacondas. And Pat Miletich pits his team, the Silverbacks, against Carlos Newton's Dragon.
Plus, two super fights you don't want to miss.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a full contact fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining the program now is Spencer the King Fisher, fresh off his victory at UFC 64 over Dan Lozon. And Spencer, how are you doing today?
Fantastic.
Spencer, my first question for you, you know, you're taking on a kid who only had four fights, 18 years old. Did he surprise you at all?
No, I knew he'd come out strong and try to take me down, so I was kind of expecting that.
You made a comment afterwards to Joe Rogan that you said you think your wrestling sucks. Was that kind of, did you say that with all sincerity, or is that just kind of trying to get a laugh?
Both. You know, that's my weak point. And actually, when it comes to me doing takedowns, taking people down, I'm okay at it. It's just my takedown defense is not as good. So.
Yeah.
Is that something, Spencer, that you've never had to, you've never felt you've had to work on because you were always the aggressor and the takedown guy, or is that something? Is that just a weakness in your game that you have to work on?
It's just a weakness in my game that I had to work on. I never really tried to take anybody down. I tried to take Sam Style down because I was exhausted in the second round, and that's one reason I even did that. But I fight with a lot of motion, and a lot of times I end up in the clinch, and I get the pay down. So it's something I have to work on.
Now, you threw another flying knee. Of course, you have the highlight, KO flying knee highlight already in your arsenal. How much did that land? Did that hurt him? It looked like it hit him more on the collarbone.
You know, I haven't even seen the fight. I really could.
By the way, that was a sweet flying knee on Matt Wyman. You have to give props where these things are due.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, first off, you mentioned, you know, squashing it after the fight. There was a lot of internet talk for maybe some people who don't know, with these alleged mysterious phone calls going between hotel rooms, between, you know, allegedly, it sounds like it could have been a bit of a troll job on the internet. Joe Lozon, Dan Lozon with Spencer Fisher was a big amok before the fight. And Spencer, you know, what are your thoughts on all that? Was it just a lot of fans getting their noses in where they don't belong?
Yeah, somebody had emailed me on MySpace, and I still have one there, and they were just trash talking me, and I didn't mind that so much. And then it got to the point where I got on the internet and I seen that he had been, I was going to pat me out fast, this, that, and the other, and then someone called my room and had spoke to Josh Neer and just really bad. I think that Josh more worked up than a good knee. So, you know, it just really added fuel to the fire.
And Dan Lozon afterwards, it sounded like you were saying, and the mic picked it up, that it wasn't him that called. Did you guys
right.
believe him? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's what he said. He said it was one of his friends that he, you know, he bitched him out for emailing me, and, you know, we squashed it. No, it's a fight, and it makes for a fight. Have a little animosity there, you know, makes for a better fight. So.
Yeah.
Find that you're actually a fighter that displays at times seemingly animosity towards your opponents, and I don't want to say you're mean-spirited or anything like that, but you seem to fight with a certain aggression and a certain passion. Do you find that actually helps you compete, or would you prefer to remain calm and clear-headed?
With me, I'm such an emotional fighter. You know, I'm an emotional person, you know, and, I throw game plans out the window, you know. I just kind of go where the fight takes me, you know, and, you know, just getting into it, getting right in their face, let them know I'm going to be there. You know, I'm going to be there the entire time, and unless I win by knockout or submission. I mean, I'm looking to finish the fight and just rough them up and roughhouse them as much as possible, and after the fight's over, I'll be the first one to buy them dinner.
Of course, Spencer, leading up to this fight, Joe Lozon took out one of your teammates, Jens Pulver. How much did that motivate you in this fight, taking on his little brother, and what's in store in the future? You'd have to assume that you know, people want to see a Joe Lozon Spencer Fisher fight.
Oh, well, I think that's what the UFC was kind of trying to build after they had offered the fight to other people. Joe Silva told me, and people turned it down flat. And Dan, I guess, was coming off of Joe was coming off a great win off of the Gens, and I think Dan thought that he could do the same and kind of use me as a stepping stone to get in the limelight and to hit stake.
Spencer, one question to follow up the Jens question. You trained with Jens, and his comeback to the UFC was highly lauded, and UFC actually, I think, had big plans for Jens. Do you think it was a surprise that Jens was defeated? I've always maintained now that the 155ers are probably the most competitive division. Do you think, really, at 155, there's a huge gap between the best of the 155ers and the rest in the UFC, like there is at 205 or heavyweight, for instance? Or do you think that was something that you guys had to have expected?
You know, it's a fight, you know, so, and a fight, God knows anything can happen, you know, and just, it just happened to Jens, you know, he's on the receiving end, and it was kind of a fluke. I mean, I don't know if you could say a fluke because he threw the punch and it landed, but his eyes were closed, for God's sake, so I guess it is what it is.
You know, obviously Joe Lozon is going to be in the picture for you coming up, but another guy I wanted to talk to you about, Sam Seld recently defeated Jan Strada by armbar at the last TKO, and I know I've interviewed you before for a story on FCF, Spencer, and you had mentioned the fact back then that you thought that you perhaps won that fight or you'd love a chance. You took that fight on short notice. Is that something that still interests you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, any fight that the UFC puts in front of me, it's going to be somebody who deserves to be in it, I believe, regardless of record or if they beat me or if I beat them. So if they see fit to put me in there, I'll fight. I don't pick any of my fights, and I'll fight whoever. And if Sam Stout wants to step up, I'll be glad, more than happy to fight him again.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think, what were some of your thoughts, Spencer, on now the awarded belt to Shirk and that fight in particular? And who do you see as possibly someone who can dethrone Shirk? Would you see him as having obvious weaknesses, or is he going to be sitting there for a while?
Well, I see, you know, being a fighter myself and in the weight class, of course you pay attention to people, especially the champions in my weight class. And Sean Stern right now is the best lightweight in my division right now. So do I see weaknesses in him? Well, of course, you know, you see him fight off his back, and he does not like to get hit off his back. However, he's not there for most of the fight, so he does a good job of staying on top, good wrestling. But, you know, for someone like me to fight him, I'm going to come out and I'm going to be blazing, going jumping knees, just off the wall stuff. And if he takes me down, then I'll fight off my back. And, you know, I think I could surprise him.
One of the issues that's come up, and it always, of course, comes up when a fighter is cut, and in the example, you see Sean Sherk, who, you know, was fairly close to losing that fight based off a cut. What, you know, it's kind of a constant debate. We've talked to David Loazzo on the show about it, Mike Swick, about the merit of elbows, and now with Pride coming to North America, they will not be allowing elbows from all sounds of it. What are your thoughts on the use of elbows in MMA? Do you think that it has a place? Do you think it's part, you know, that's part of the reason we call it mixed martial arts is because of, you know, the use of elbows and knees? Or do you think there's some merit to the argument that they should be banned because they just open up cuts so easily?
No, so far I haven't been on the receiving end of a fight-ending elbow, but I think a fight's a fight, and I think you should be able to do everything except eye gouging and headbutts. But I think everything else, I think kicks to a down opponent should be allowed, and I think elbows should be allowed. You know, it's a fight, so let's fight.
Mm-hmm. Spencer, do you think you would have an advantage in preparing for someone like a Shirk? He's often referred to as a small Matt Hughes, and you train with the big Matt Hughes. Do you think that's an accurate comparison, and do you think you would have some kind of insight into solving someone like Sean Shirk in that way?
Well, on that note, yeah, but there's only one Matt Hughes. But yeah, he is very similar to Matt. But I have great wrestlers, maybe more accomplished wrestlers than Shirk is in my room. So being on the bottom we do ground and pound, you know, and it's for real. It's like fighting. So I'm on the bottom all the time. But in all my fights, I don't take much damage. Now, could Sean do it? Well, I don't know, because we haven't fought yet, but I'd be willing to say that I could get back up at some point during that fight, and I would be able to hit him.
On that same thread, if you look around the lightweight division and Brendan alluded to the fact that it's an extremely deep division. You've got Joe Stevenson, who's kind of a similar Sean Sherk model in the sense he's a very big, lightweight. He does the ground pound. You've got Mark Hominick. Who are some of the guys, Spencer, that you can figure, other than yourself, challenging Sean Sherk for his title?
I don't think Hominick could, just simply because he's a really smaller guy. I mean, he's done great things so far, but he's not a wrestler by any means. And for someone like Sherk to get a hold of him, it'd be pretty bad. Melvin Gilliard would be someone who would be tough, I think, just because Melvin is fast and explosive. But again, he has a lot of holes also. So.
Yeah. Well, Melvin's a very big lightweight as well.
Yeah, but I think he'd be someone else to challenge Sherk.
And on that same thought, is with Mark Hominick, that's something I think a lot of fans would like to see, Team Top against teammate of Sam Stout. That'd be an interesting matchup to see Spencer Fisher versus Mark Hominick.
Oh, absolutely. We go in there and bang.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'd be a great fight.
If Joel Silva's listening.
Yeah, that's right.
Brendan, do you have anything else?
I'm his illegitimate son. Do you remember? Did you forget that I'm his illegitimate son?
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot that had come up in the past.
Spencer, after watching the pay-per-view, I have a question. I have a new theory. I'm all about the conspiracy theories. Here's my theory. Hear me out and fill me in on this. Kim Sylvia is wearing the belt to every. It seems he wears it everywhere.
There we go.
Picture you see in the belt. Is he doing that just to get it so disgusting that no one will ever actually want to win it from him?
I don't know. Tim, you know, he's a champion. I think he deserves to wear the belt wherever he pleases.
Wherever, Spencer? Wherever he pleases?
Wherever he pleases. It's his, right?
Right.
So, until someone beats him, takes it from my theory, he does whatever he wants to win it.
My last question for you, Spencer, what were your thoughts on, you know, the whole MMA world is a buzz about what happened to Rich Franklin. What were your thoughts? And give us more of a fighter. Did you see the fight first off?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts strategically? Yeah. As a fighter, give us the insight on what you think he might have done wrong or underestimated Anderson in.
Well, I think that Anderson was a lot stronger in the clinch than Rich expected, and I don't think Rich has someone of the caliber maybe to spar with him. Anderson Silva. So I just think that was a total surprise for him, you know, to deal with somebody as Anderson Silva is in the clinch. So I think that was really the problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, Spencer, as difficult as the UFC is to figure out what they're doing sometimes, did that make sense to you guys in the Miletich camp, being close to Franklin and knowing that, you know, he was a sort of this all-American guy, or people have called him a poster boy? Did that make sense to you that they put him in against Sylvia so quickly and after such an extensive injury?
No, you know, I think Rich is a fighter's fighter, you know, and he's ready to fight anybody. And when they gave him Anderson, I think he thought, well, hey, you know, let me prove that I'm a champion and I'll fight whoever they put in front of me. That's the kind of champion people want. So I think it was a smart decision for him to take the fight rather than run like some people have in the past.
Yeah. Well, Spencer, we appreciate you taking some time out. I know you probably just got back into town, all the way back from the West Coast just recently in the last day or so. So we appreciate you taking time out, and we'll look forward to having you on the show again.
I think so, guys.
Thanks a lot, Spencer.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Kurt the Batman Pellegrino, who's fresh off a rear naked choke win at UFC 64 with Junior Ascencao. Kurt, how you doing? Did you just get back home? You back out east?
Yeah, I just got home. I got home actually yesterday. Took the red eye.
Oh wow! So you got to be kind of tired.
Yeah, I'm a little tired.
Oh well, we appreciate you coming on the show. Your fight wasn't shown on the pay-per-view portion. I haven't checked UFC On Demand to see yet if it's up on their On Demand section of the site. But for those of us who didn't see the fight, other than the result itself, maybe talk us through, you know, the end of the fight and your thoughts overall.
Absolutely. Well, it is on the UFC On Demand.
Is it? Okay.
So after I'm done explaining it, everyone hopefully go on there and check it out and see how good I did. Well, the fight went as planned. I trained, you know, fighter trains every day. Junior was a last-minute replacement, and he's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, so I figured that he was going to come at me with some, you know, loopy punches. So I just kind of backed away, timed them, and took them down and decided to just keep moving, working on the ground, passing, throwing some shots at his face, and kind of got him in like a crucifix, blocking one arm with my head and the other arm with my legs, and started punching him in the face a little bit like that, and ended up, he got nervous and shorted me his back and just basically finished him. Just, you know, some ground and pound and just a dominant performance. So I was happy with the results.
You mentioned Junior's brown belt in jiu-jitsu. You yourself are a black belt in jiu-jitsu, correct?
Yes.
Maybe tell us a little bit about your background, Kurt. I know you've got a strong wrestling background as well, training at the Army. So maybe for those listeners who aren't familiar with your background, give us a little info on that.
My background is wrestler. I was a wrestler for a long time. I trained jiu-jitsu in New Jersey and then moved to Florida to continue my career and proceed into bigger and better shows. Yeah, so, I mean, I got my black belt from Hermes Franca and just wanted to get my boxing better. So I was actually going to start doing some professional boxing bouts as well.
It was a big weekend for the Army because Hermes Franca defeated Nate Diaz by armbar at the WEC. Have you talked to Hermes yet about his fight?
I actually watched it. He actually came in Friday with the DVD of his fight, and we watched the fight together. We both watched the fight together, and he told me, like, I started off slow, and he said, just go out there and start off fast, don't make that same mistake, and go out there and do what you do best, what you do in practice, you know. And it was good seeing that, you know, especially Hermes, you know, fighting and seeing that some of the best people in the world can start off slow and still come back to win. You know what I mean? And he kept himself under control and knew that the second round was a whole other round. So and when he told me that, it made me feel really good. So I went in there and did exactly what he told me to do. Just be ready for the storm and get ready just to weather it and take control.
This recent UFC victory for you was your second fight in the UFC, and in your debut you lost to Drew Fick in the third round, long fight. Was that fight at 170 against Drew?
Yes, it was at 170 pounds.
And so what were your thoughts now looking back? Were you kind of nervous? It was your UFC debut. Was it kind of nerve-wracking for you, or was it just a strategic mistake at the end?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I could sit here and make excuses for myself. You know, I didn't think I was nervous, so I didn't let anyone say that I was nervous. The problem was is that when I fought Drew Fickett, I walked around at 165 pounds the week of, and I ate food, dinner, right before the weigh-ins, and got up to 168. I mean, I trained hard. I just got married, so I only had 3 weeks to prepare for that fight. But you don't turn down a UFC fight, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I took it the way I did, and I had a great experience. And I didn't eat the right way. I didn't carb up. I didn't drink any Pedialyte because I didn't think I had to. So I lost that fight because I didn't prepare the right way and eat the right foods. Things might have been different if anyone had saw that fight because I was winning pretty bad. But at the end of the day, you know, that's the way God wanted it. He wanted Drew to win and wanted me to be more motivated and to go down to 155 pounds. And by losing that fight, that's why I went down to 155. So I could fight the guys the truly way as much as I weigh. So that's why I did those things. And I thank God that I lost that fight because I knew what I had to do to become a champion again. So.
Now that leads into my next question. You, of course, moved down 155 pounds. You know, and you kind of answered part of it, stating that you feel much more comfortable. It's your natural fighting weight. When you look around at the lightweight division, there's a ton of talent. What are your thoughts on Sean Sherk as the champion? Did you get to see that, the fight against Kenny Florian?
I think Sean Sherk, I watched that fight with Kenny Florian. Kenny Florian's an unbelievable jiu-jitsu guy. Stand-up's great. His wrestling, I'm sure he's going to be working on a little bit more. But Sean Sherk's a phenomenal champion, and Kenny Florian would have been a great champion, too. And either one of them would have had the belt for a couple of title defenses in my eyes. Sean Sherk, you know, I'm not going to say anything negative about him. He's a great champ. People that watch the fight know what they got to do to beat a person like Sean. But I think Sean's going to hold the belt for a long time, and I think that there's so many people at this weight class that could beat Sean, and I think there's so many people in the weight class that even if they do beat Sean, that could beat them. The weight class is so wide open right now that anyone that has the belt, I don't believe will be able to hold it for a long time because there's so many people out there that are better than the next guy or better than that, what that guy does best. And, you know, the first person that has a takedown defense is going to beat Sean. So, I mean, there's so many things that are going to happen in this weight class. I think it's going to be the hardest belt to hold once they get it. And I hope Sean can hold the belt for a long time because I think he'll be a great champion, well-deserved champion too, by the way.
Where do you put yourself in the mix? You've got a wrestling background, as you mentioned. Do you see yourself being able to wrestle and compete with Sean better on that level than perhaps a Kenny Florian did?
Well, you know, I don't want to make a fool of myself and say I want a title shot now. There's so many great guys out there that are ahead of me that have been fighting in the UFC before me, like Joe Stevenson that's been fighting at 170 and he fought a fight at 55 already. But you know, before I would want a title shot, I would like to fight Hominick. Hopefully the UFC could set that up because I actually want to stand up and show my hands and with a great stand-up guy, and I think that'd be a real exciting fight. But if they give me Sean Sherk, then it was my time, and I'm ready when he is, so it doesn't make a difference to me.
Well, we had Spencer Fisher on the program earlier, and you're absolutely right. There's a ton of talent in the 155-pound division. Kind of not necessarily remarkable, perhaps, isn't the right choice of words, but considering that the division didn't even exist over a year ago, and now you look at how many great fighters. And do you feel, Kurt, that the fans are starting to come around? You know, that was kind of the logic before with the UFC not having the division was that, in essence, they didn't have enough shows to provide enough opportunities for the fighters. But as well, there was always kind of this idea that perhaps the fans weren't interested in smaller fighters. And I think that theory has been, you know, thankfully disproven. As a fighter in the lightweight division, do you see the fans starting to respond better to the action that only lightweights can give?
Well, you know what? If you look at it, if you put two big guys in a ring, you're going to be the most boring fight of the night because they're so big and they're just laying down and they gasp and their hands are down. But if you put two 155-pounders in, what do you get? You get two dynamic guys that weigh 155 pounds. They're faster, doing crazy moves, doing jiu-jitsu on the ground that don't ever get tired. And what did we get in the UFC that night? We got a submission of the night from Clay Guida. The fight was nonstop. Spencer Fisher and Dan Lozon that were trying to kill each other before the fight and then during the fight, which stopped in the first round. And then you had me and Junior, which I think was a nonstop fight and only lasted 2 minutes. You look at all the big guys and you kind of just sit there waiting for something to happen. So someone to get tired. Who's going to get tired first? At 55, no one's going to get tired and everyone's going to go at each other and try to kill each other. The weight class at 155 is probably the best weight class in the UFC right now. There's so many people in it. And I think a lot of the 170 pounders are going to drop down to be a part of that. I mean, if they can, be a part of it. There's so much going on in there. And really, in my eyes, it's up to the fans and Dana White and Joe Silva who they think could compete against the champion, Sean Sherk. Who is it? You know what I mean? Like, who could do it? You know? Who knows? It's such a... Everyone's so good here. It's amazing.
As a jiu-jitsu practitioner and a black belt continuing, you look at the success of Krokop or Liddell, and obviously these men do train in jiu-jitsu as well, but you know, you see certain people, whether it's on internet forums or make comments in MMA articles that jiu-jitsu isn't as prevalent or that people aren't, you don't necessarily need the level of expertise that perhaps you once did, and then fighters becoming more accustomed to jiu-jitsu and train the defense better, etc. And yet, when you look at the statistics, that doesn't really ring true. Submissions still have a high rate of, as far as ending fights. What would you say to those people, Kurt, who sometimes try to say, well, you know, jiu-jitsu isn't as necessary, or not so much necessary, but isn't as dominant a factor in the game as it used to be?
Well, for those people that say that are probably, like, phenomenal kickboxers or a phenomenal wrestler. I'll fight anyone out there at 155 pounds that says he doesn't need jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And when I take him down, I want to see how much he wishes that he had jiu-jitsu. Like I said, Junior was a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, and I passed his guard and took his back as if he was a white belt. And Junior's great. He's a great fighter. He's tough as nails. But when I take you down, that's when jiu-jitsu comes in. The guys that say that are people that are good at one thing, the top game, staying in your guard and just pounding away. Mm-hmm. And when the ref goes, stand back up, then they're good, they're home, they're back on their feet. And when the guy sprawls, the jiu-jitsu guy will sit guard. Jiu-jitsu comes in handy when you have a black belt in jiu-jitsu on a white belt on the ground, or a blue belt, or a purple belt. You know, you watch when Arona takes someone down in Pride, what's he do? He passes mouth, boom, takes her back, game over. You know, so the people that think that you don't need jiu-jitsu, just don't ever get taken down by a black belt. Because if you do, it's going to have a hard time.
Yeah.
You're going to have a real hard time. That's how I look at it. That's why I love being as good as I am in jiu-jitsu, because I'm going to take you down. And then once I take you down, you have a Division I wrestler on top of you and a black belt in jiu-jitsu. It's not a real safe place to be.
So you're saying that more the kind of people who say that are the ones who try to buy into the game, that you're okay as long as you want, as long as the person who's not a high level of jiu-jitsu lands in the guard?
Yeah, what I mean by that is, you have people that come into our school at the Armory in Jupiter, Florida, and when they come in there and they say, oh, I want to be a fighter, I'm a D1 wrestler, I'm like, oh, wow, all right, cool, come on in there. And then we set them to roll with our blue belts, and my blue belts submit them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, now, do you really think you're ready to step into a fight? And if you take this guy, well, I'm going to punch him, okay. So then we put the boxing gloves on, the headgear, and they start doing that. It's the people that are unbelievable. Like, it's hard to explain. If you're going to fight in the jiu-jitsu world and the UFC level, you either have to be a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, or I wouldn't step into a full contact fight against a high opposition if I wasn't a purple belt.
Yeah. Kurt, you mentioned that you moved down to Florida to make this your career, mixed martial arts. When you made that decision, did you have any idea at the time about the growth of mixed martial arts and the kind of opportunities it would afford you?
You know, when I moved to Florida, I was having a rough time in my life, and I needed a change of scenery. So when I moved down here, I said, this is my life. This is what I want to do for a living. And, I went to ATT, and they told me to teach with Hermes Franca at the Armory. And I said, okay, I was still part of ATT. and I realized what it was like to be a professional fighter the moment I stepped into that gym at ETK. I said, this is what it's going to be. This is how I'm going to get to the UFC, to the biggest stage in the world. This is what I have to do. I have to live here. And, you know, I left everyone, all my friends. I left everything and everyone and got an apartment. And, you know, Hermes gave me my black belt, and, you know, we decided to run a school together in Jupiter. And that's where I've been ever since, and been boxing with professional boxers. And, you know, my hands have never been this good a day in my life. And I wish I could have showed that, but smart fighters out there knew what I had to do when I fought Junior, because it would have been stupid if I would have stayed on my feet with someone. The only chance was to throw bombs, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I moved to Florida and saw all the guys and trained with Hermes and Walt Boyd and Rafael Chavez, I knew what level I had to compete with. And when you can compete with a UFC legend like Hermes Franca, I mean, that's your weight class. I mean, that was it. That was my deciding factor. You know, Rich Crunkleton, you train with all these guys, you're like, wow, this is it. And that's why I left.
Well, Kurt, we know you just got in early this morning. Obviously, you're a very busy weekend for you, and I'm sure you had a late night celebrating on Saturday. And maybe you lost, maybe Sunday night too, who knows. But we appreciate you coming on the show, Kurt, and wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. And I just want to thank Full Contact Fighter for giving me the opportunity, and that Kurt, Batman Pellegrino is back at 155 and ready for my next challenge.
All right, man. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mo must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English, must be received by Mr. Mo before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Thank you for coming back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, some interesting comments from Spencer Fisher and Kurt Pellegrino. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about, very excited about the return of the UFC lightweight division and how entertaining it is. And I think fans are really starting to catch on to that as well. And two more lightweights here that probably have a very bright future in the UFC. With Kurt, you know, he lost to Drew Fickett at 170 pounds, talked about that in the interview. Feels much more comfortable at 155. And then you got a guy like Spencer Fisher who, a lot of people are already, you know, using the most entertaining, those kind of comments when they talk about his fighting style.
He's superbly entertaining, and I really appreciate that about him. He's got a really dynamic personality, although I kind of got the vibe that he was, angry with us for some reason. Did you say something bad to him before we interviewed him?
No, man. I didn't get that feeling at all. I didn't get that feeling at all. I've talked to Spencer before. I've done a story on him for the paper, and no, I think that's just the way he is, you know. I think he gets amped up for these fights, and there's certainly that kind of persona to him when he's fighting and before the fight or after. But when I've talked to him in the past and read other interviews with him, etc., that's kind of the way he is on his downtime.
You didn't say anything?
Shut up. I think it was interesting, too, to see talking about Sean Sherk, and both Kurt Pellegrino and Spencer Fisher had high praise for Sean Sherk. You know, both acknowledge that there's probably some loopholes or things that they could try to exploit if they were to fight him. But, you know, both were very respectful of Sean Sherk, and they both seem to hint that they believe Sean Sherk could have a fairly lengthy title reign.
Well, if you think about it, look at his, what does he have, two losses? Mm-hmm. One to George St. Pierre and one to Matt Hughes. And George St. Pierre basically mauled and brawled him and overpowered him, and he took Matt Hughes to a decision. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who will be the one to step up and unseat him if that happens. But that being said, we should talk about the entire card.
I haven't got a chance to look over some of the fights on the on-demand portion of the UFC website. Kurt Pellegrino's fight, he was saying, was on there. Didn't get to see Caleb Starnes lost to Yushin Okami. But the first one I guess we can talk about, that I'm sure you saw as well, because it was on the pay-per-view after the live portion, was Clayton Guida versus Justin James. And, you know, Clayton Guida's had a lot of success, especially down in the southern states, California area. There's been a lot written about him. And this was my first opportunity to see him fight, and he did impress me. Very active ground-and-pound style of game, and looked like he had great takedowns. And, you know, I think I could see him definitely making some waves.
Yeah, it looks like he had a ton of gas, for sure. If anything, if there was any criticism of his style, is that he's a slight bit sloppy on the ground and in being so aggressive in his ground and pound. He seems to be susceptible to the... Well, he just barely slipped out of an armbar, which is fantastic. That was really nice to see. He had a great defense. But I think he's had problems down there before. Yeah, I think he lost a shootout fight in a triangle, and... So I think that's one of the weaknesses of this game, if you can call it a weakness, from that being over aggressive on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, he does have some losses. You're absolutely right. He's got six losses. He's lost people like Gilbert Melendez, who, you know, is one of the better 145-pound, 155-pound fighters in the world. So he does have some losses, but like I said, you know, in this day and age of the UFC, that's the great thing about having so many cards, is that we get to see guys who have maybe five, six losses,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they're still afforded an opportunity, which is great.
Well, I think that, you know, more and more, Kels, that's going to be the reality of MMA. I've said this before, you know, people with perfect records haven't fought enough of the greats, and there's still a few people around with perfect records. I think Rashad Evans still has a perfect record. I think Diego Sanchez still has a perfect record. But more and more, that's meaningless to me. And I think it's important that when guys go out, they're not trying to protect their records with sloppy wins, but they're trying to put on a good show and turn it out and try and get the win. And unfortunately, I think the UFC rules maybe put a little bit of a cramp on that more than the Pride rules. But I like the philosophy behind that. I like the feel behind that. You know, I like to see fighters go out and be aggressive, and Guida's a great example of that. It's also nice to see someone with some hair in the UFC.
Yeah, he definitely had a lot of hair. It's true. I don't really know if I really was paying too much attention to that, but apparently you were, so.
Well, it's tough to fight with that much hair. You remember in the old UFCs, they used to have, you know, there used to be gentlemen's agreements not to pull the pony of the other man, who also had a pony.
Oh, look at Evan Tanner, though. You know, he had a lot of
hair. Yeah, the long hair just kind of went by the way. I think, you know what, I think Tanner killed it because of the cornrows.
Yeah, but no, I think he went from the cornrows back to it, though, didn't he?
Yeah, I know.
Whatever,
I
this
know.
Is ridiculous. You mentioned fighters who had an undefeated record, and, you know, Caleb Starnes had lost to Kendall Grove in the reality show, but that isn't usually recorded in their actual records, and his first loss was to Yushin Okami. I think a lot of people are probably surprised by this to a degree, but... On the flip side, you look at Yushin Okami and what he's done in the last year, and he's been surprising people everywhere.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't surprised by that. And I said before, I thought the UFC was doing Starnes no favors by setting him up against Okami, and that certainly turned out that way. And it would be interesting to see. I'm not watching those fights out of a matter of principle, so I'm not going to pay for the undercard fight. So you'll have to fill us in when you buy them off the UFC website.
All right, buddy. And then Spencer Fisher and Dan Lozon, you know, we talked about this with Spencer a little bit when we had him on the show earlier, but, you know, I got to say, and Spencer, I asked him if he was surprised by Dan, and you know, he said he wasn't really, but I think a lot of people, that kid's got a fairly bright future, you would have to assume, from based on what he did early on in that fight.
Yeah, it's always entertaining to see these young guys, these up and coming young guys that actually have, you know, the huevos to step in the ring and not be completely unnerved and throw down. It reminded me of, you know, going to high school when I was in grade 9, you know, coming out of grade 8 with all these little kids, and then you're walking around the hallway with these dudes with beards, you know, that can cram you into lockers and torture you in other ways, throw you in the garbage can and stuff like that. And it kind of reminds me of the UFC, these 18-year-old guys coming in and literally looking like boys, but holding their own. It's pretty impressive, actually.
Well, and yeah, and I think that just reflects the evolution of the sport and the fact that some of these guys start training full contact training at 12, 13 years old. So they've already got 5 years under their belts by the time they get to the UFC. And he looked impressive. You know, at the end, I think he looked a little bit intimidated. It looks like he got rocked by the knee, which appeared to have landed more in the collarbone, and then Spencer landed some shots as well. But, yeah, definitely have to hand it to Dan Lozon, and you would assume that he's got a bright future ahead of him. The next fight I want to talk about is Carmelo Moreira's split decision victory over Jack Congo. And, you know, it's not like the UFC have done a great deal of marketing with Congo, but you also have gotten the sense, the fact that he's been on, they've been showing his fights on the pay-per-view. He's had some notable wins by KO. He's a very imposing, athletic figure. And the fact that he had such difficulty with Moreira and preventing the takedowns, you really have to question from here whether or not, you know, Chuck Congo is going to be continue to be pushed as a potential contender in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone's getting down on him. I thought he actually looked not so bad on the ground. Apart from defending the takedowns, he's actually fairly active on the ground, you know, and you don't often see the big guys going for that many submissions, and he had a near couple. At least he had some decent attempts. I think my impression of this fight was if this fight was in Pride, Congo would have won, you know, just because of the rules. And I think, you know, it was for me a little bit tough to watch because it's one of these things where I think this is a demonstration of how the UFC rules are really biased against, well, I guess they're not biased. They promote people who are decent wrestlers and over people who are inevitably going to end up on their back. So that fight, what was the turning point in that fight was literally, you know, what, three or four, five maybe takedowns. But what happened after the takedowns? Nothing much, you know. So I was very unimpressed. By that fight. Congo looked all right to me. He didn't look like a bum, but what's he going to do? You know, what's he going to do? Moreira looked far more unimpressive than Congo to me. But if he gets two takedowns, he wins a round. He wins two rounds, then you just sort of ride out the fight. And I think one of the problems with UFC allowing elbows and the Athletic Commission allowing elbows and not kicking a downed opponent means that a wrestler like Moreira could come in, spend an entire fight taking sloppy shots or not so sloppy shots and never have to pay the price for, you know, getting caught on your hands and knees in front of a standing opponent like Congo. So, and then when they're in the process of taking someone down, when they get a successful takedown, you know, they just go for the elbow to get the cut. So I think, you know, I'm not against elbows necessarily, but I think it's impossible to separate them from being able to kick a downed opponent just to even up the score.
Well, I'd have to watch the fight again. I don't agree with some of the things you're saying. I thought Congo, to me, didn't look particularly active from the ground. I know what you're saying. A lot of people are kind of out there dissing the guy a lot over the last couple of days, but he shows some promise standing, and he's a very impressive striker. But I thought with Moreira, let's not forget too that this guy took the fight, I think, on about 7 days' notice. His wrestling, he's only got a record of 5-0. He's not that experienced, so who knows how much transition time he's been able to have between wrestling and jiu-jitsu. And it was clear that he wasn't trying to pass the guard too much. But in saying that, I don't, it was tough. It was a tough fight. It was a slow fight to watch. It was pretty boring. The next fight I want to talk about is John Fitch versus Kinoyoshi Hironaka, and I thought this was probably the most entertaining fight of the night from my standpoint. Clearly, with the title on the line, there was more drama behind Sean Sherk and Ken Florian and the shocking knockout. Rich Franklin was very captivating, very compelling story there. But as far as just pure entertainment, I thought the John Fitch, Kinoyoshi Hironaka, from a tactical, strategic look at a fight, I thought that was the most entertaining fight of the night.
Well, for sure, yeah. I thought it was a great-looking fight. Fitch looked to be dominant early on, but I think he had his nose broken then and came back from that, and he looked strong. And I appreciated the fight. I thought it was one of the better ones. That's certainly one of the one of the easiest on the eyes and one of the most entertaining in terms of the different reversals of fortune all the way through the fight.
Yeah, and Hironaka, he impressed me too. Showed a lot of you know, heart, fortitude. Fitch's takedowns were really good, you know, and Hironaka kept fighting through that, looking for submissions. He impressed me. And overall, I think that, you know, I'd like to see him back as well. But I think the win for Fitch definitely really entrenches him. They're going to have to throw him up against some more top-flight guys at 170 pounds. But, you know, I think people should really start taking notice of John Fitch.
Mm-hmm. I think he... again, I don't think many people are familiar with Hironaka, so maybe Fitch's win doesn't seem that impressive. But, you know, people who know the MMA game, especially the Japanese game, know that, you know, Hironaka is a game fighter.
So let's discuss Sean Sherry versus Kevin Florian and Rich Franklin and Anderson Silva before we get out of here. And what are your thoughts on the Sean Sherry Kenny Florian fight?
I was actually pretty nervous when, not pretty nervous, but I thought something might be up when Shirk was cut because he was leaking like crazy. And it was interesting because I noticed where the cut was. It probably wouldn't interfere with him, but it would be interesting to see, it was interesting to see how the cut was affecting Florian, because Shirk was literally bleeding onto his face and into his eyes. And a lot of people that I was watching with were, you know, again, that visceral disgust. Oh, my God, how can this continue on, and so on and so forth. But this is interesting. So the rules are they won't stop it if it's not impeding Shirk's game. But when Florian's on the bottom and he's got blood flowing into his eyes, you got to consider that to be kind of an unfair advantage.
I thought that, you know, one thing that was clear from that fight is props to Kenny Florian for the stand-up. He really rocked Shirk with some kicks to the body. It was obviously he had the better of Shirk standing. But you have to look at it, and the guy's ground game is so sound, and he is very, very similar to Matt Hughes, where you have trouble seeing him get submitted. You know, Matt Hughes almost was submitted by BJ Penn recently, but other than that, you know, he's shown pretty good capabilities of passing the guard, staying within a guard, and avoiding submissions, Matt Hughes, and likewise for Sean Sherk.
Well, I think he's even. I'm going to go as far as this. I'm going to go as far to say is I think he's at 155. He's probably more dominant than Hughes. He's got better takedowns than Hughes. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have that two round warm up period that Hughes seems to have at times. So I think he's even more dominant at 155 than Hughes is at 170. That's now I'm saying that after one fight. But if you look at his career, and you look at his win to loss ratio, it's going to be tough to see who's going to get him out of there. And you know, props to Florian. Is I think I'm going to go as far as to say is Florian going five rounds with Shirk was for me the biggest surprise of the night, more surprising than Silva's victory over Franklin.
When you look at Sean Shirk and you look who he lost to at 170 and his most recent loss to George St. Pierre. The only way I can see him losing is if he comes up against a lightweight who can have the same sort of game that George St. Pierre did against him. Good stand-up, able to squash his takedown attempts, and furthermore even put Shirk on his back because he's the bigger, more powerful fighter, and that was the case with George St. Pierre versus Sean Shirk. And if you look at the lightweight division, the only guys off the top of my head who strike me as capable of having those kind of game plans. Of course, Sean Shirk, maybe he could get caught with a punch or a kick and knocked out. That's not that it can happen to any fighter. I'm just saying that the guys that right away from the top of my head that you look at that might have a game plan where they can put Shirk on his back and work from there, but after, you know, maybe Joe Stevenson comes to mind. He's got good takedowns. He's a big 155er. Mm-hmm. He's got a chance at that. And then someone like Melvin Guillard, who's not noted for his takedowns, but he's a big, powerful 155-pounder too, who maybe can match up strength-wise against Shirk. And if you look at other guys, like we were talking about Mark Hominick and with Spencer Fisher, etc., yeah, outside of like a flying knee or a kick, punch, you know, I think fighters like those styles are going to have a difficult time against Shirk.
Yeah, I think so. And Shirk, you know, one of the things that I really appreciated Shirk against Florian is that Shirk literally took him down at will. Right? Did Florian stuff one takedown? I can't recall off the top of my head, but I'm not even sure if he stuffed one.
I think a couple times, maybe a little bit, you know, to a point where they're pushed up against the cage and he managed to to prevent the takedown for another 15, 20 seconds, that kind of thing. But, yeah, right. As far as flat out squashing it and, you know, keeping the fight standing, no.
Yeah. So that was pretty remarkable, but props to Florian for hanging in there. I was certainly impressed by that.
Well, you picked right on the main event. You know, I think it's funny now that, let's face it, I mean, a lot of people out there, a lot of people thought that Anderson Silva, and I'm talking about the experts, the writers, a lot of people out there thought that Silva was going to be definitely a huge threat to Rich Franklin's title. But I still, you know, from what I read or heard people saying, most people were still picking Franklin. And, you know, I admit, I thought Franklin was going to win. I thought it was going to be very competitive. I was a little surprised with the way the fight went down. But you picked Silva.
Well, you know, yeah, I picked Silva because there's too many, you know, we just saw Silva fight. We had no reason to believe that that Silva was busted up. And Franklin had too many unknowns. And it's not like, you know, it's not like you're fighting a guy who is only going to take you down and ground and pound you or what have you. You're fighting a guy who, if you make one miscue, has the potential to make you pay for it, right? And you pay by having your lights knocked out. So this was one of the things that I thought was a real possibility. You know, Franklin comes in, and you think back to Loazzo's ring rust. It took him two rounds to get the fight going against Swick, and maybe the two fighters respond differently, but there's still enough doubt in my mind that I saw it as a definite possibility.
Well, now I think the most interesting debate is what the UFC does from here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I think, obviously the win for Anderson Silva looked extremely impressive. His striking abilities are well documented before this fight and now approaching the legendary kind of heights. And I think Rich Franklin in his corner have to sit back and maybe look over the game plan and wonder, question standing with Silva, not looking for an opportunity. But, you know, he admitted he didn't expect Silva to be that strong in the clinch, and that was his downfall. And yeah, that is the real remaining question for me, is if you look at the middleweight division and who deserves a title shot right now, who out there has a shot at beating Anderson Silva? And right away people are saying, well, Mike Swick deserves a shot. Probably does if you look compared to the rest of the middleweight fighters that are left. However, Mike Swick is most noted for his striking capabilities, and you would think that if he was to fight someone like Anderson Silva, he would have to try to get that fight to the ground.
Yeah, no, I don't see that. I think Swick looked okay against Loazzo. Did Swick come close to beating Loazzo? No. And if the fight would have gone two more rounds, would he have won the fight? Probably not. So what would Swick do to Silva that would be different than he did to Loazzo is my question. That's the first question. And is as much as I like David, is he the same, does he have the same, I guess, capacity for, you know, single dramatic knockouts that Silva has demonstrated? No.
No.
So, you know,
no, and that's what I'm saying. Is
I don't see them putting in Swick. I know. I think I read in on one of the forums Swick actually posting the fact that he wanted Loazzo. So I give him credit for having the stones to step up. But
wanted Loazzo,
UFC,
mean Silva.
I can't see the UFC making that happen just because, you know, I think they got to find someone who's going to take Silva into the second round. And I can't, to be quite honest, I can't see Swick doing that.
No, that's what I'm saying, is I think that the person who is going to beat Anderson Silva is going to be someone who can keep him on his back, take him down, keep him on his back, avoid submissions, and pound out a victory.
And there's only one person that pops into my mind that is the obvious choice, and this guy's got to be laughing right now, because now he could be the only savior for unseating a Brazilian as the middleweight champion, and he's someone who the UFC has scorned in the form of Matt Lindland. So he's the only guy that I think could step in. I would have to say that he would be almost a favorite against Anderson.
Yeah, and yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that too. If they brought back Matt Lindland, all of a sudden, you've got you could put Matt Lindland as the favorite.
But it's the only obvious fight because you love Matt Lindland, he wins, everything's good. You hate Matt Lindland, Silva knocks his block off, everything's good. So it's a win-win. You have profound satisfaction on the lovers or the haters of Matt Lindland either. So
well, it depends on what they want to do with Rich Franklin too. And I think, to be honest, people said right away, people were like, "Well, Rich Franklin lost. This is horrible for the UFC. It's their one of their more marketable champions." But you also have to look at it as it, and don't get me wrong when I say this, because Anderson Silva is not a bad guy. That's not what I'm trying to say. He showed a lot of emotion. I thought it was very sweet, actually, the emotion. It was really cool how happy he was. But sometimes there is something good in creating hype when you, quote-unquote, got a bad guy as a champ. And that's not, not in the sense that Anderson Silva's a mean man, but just in the sense that fans maybe aren't so familiar with him. He doesn't speak English. He doesn't have that kind of he hasn't been on a reality show like Rich Franklin did. So why not have some of these guys, put some of your other stars, young stars, up against Anderson Silva, see how he fares. Meanwhile, you try to get back Matt Lindland. You see how Rich Franklin does. You try to get him on the comeback path. And then maybe in a year from now, after Silva's defended his title a couple more times, and Franklin or Matt Lindland's back in the picture, all of a sudden you've got this huge mega fight where you've got this newly entrenched champion in Anderson Silva with a lot of impressive victories to go up against, Rich Franklin or Matt Lindland or maybe someone else who's worked their way up.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally right. And it's not, you don't have to pitch. You don't have to pitch Anderson Silva as a bad guy.
Well, on that note, Brendan, we got to get out of here. We're getting really long in the tooth on the show, so we'll talk to you later this week.
Sounds good, my friend. You take it easy.
Okay.